As part of the National Dialogue on Sexual Assault, the last few months have put a magnifying glass on how the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints handles complaints of abuse, some of them decades old, like the accusation that a former church leader raped a young missionary, which is now the focus of a lawsuit. And as KUER's Lee Hale reports, there are many similar stories that have yet to see the spotlight.
Michelle Stone and Melinda Aaron are sisters, and both say they were abused by their father, a former local church leader. The abuse took place during their teenage years, in the 80s and early 90s. They sat down together to tell their story publicly for the first time. This reporting also draws on court records.
It started with, "I need you to rub my lower back," but it would be with nothing but a hand towel covering his body, and lowering that quite low.
Michelle says her father would then ask to give her a massage. It escalated from there. As she got older, Michelle's father would slip into her bed and molest her. Her younger sister, Melinda, says she noticed the change in how her father treated her once she hit puberty. Her father would make comments about how she and Michelle looked.
He would compare my body to hers and almost try and make me feel better that she would wish that she had a body like mine, which was also very odd.
Melinda says she was molested as well. Their father, Bill Aaron, is now in his 70s and previously served as a Mormon bishop for a college congregation. When reached for comment at his home, he said his daughter's claims are fictitious. The sisters are in their 40s now, but have decided to share their story because they've realized they're not alone. Others have experienced abuse and similarly felt silenced by their Mormon community. For a long time, the sisters didn't talk about the abuse, even with each other. It didn't come up until Michelle was out of the house and married with a child of her own. Melinda was babysitting for Michelle's son one night in 1992 at their parents' home. When Michelle returned to pick up her 2-year-old, she walked into Melinda's bedroom and saw her journal open.
Words had leapt off the page to the effect of, "I hate him. I, you know, never want to be around him."
Michelle says she didn't have to guess who Melinda was talking about. Days later, they went for a drive up Provo Canyon. Michelle knew if she came right out with it that her younger and more reserved sister might close off. She started slow, sharing simple details.
"Dad gets angry at me if I lock my door. If I used to lock the door, I would get in trouble. I would get grounded if I locked the door."
Michelle talked about the ways their father behaved inappropriately. She says Melinda was nodding her head. As they talked, Melinda opened up.
"What it did was it gave me a safe person. It gave me someone I could talk to about it and who understood completely."
Michelle was grateful when Melinda finally trusted her with her story, but she also felt racked with guilt.
"My own silence had an effect on my sister, and sorry. Something that I had never thought of until that day, because there are 8 years between us. And so she was such a little person when it was happening to me that it never occurred to me that he would ever see her the way that he was seeing me."
So the first instinct was involve mom?
Yes.
And then what did she say?
"We have to go tell the bishop."
And that's what they did. The sisters hoped they could speak with their bishop alone, but he insisted on having their father in the room. Their father denied everything they said. When they would share a new detail of the abuse, he would interrupt, saying, "That's not how I remember it happening."
"I remember you and I turning and looking at each other with our eyes wide open and shaking our heads."
Shock.
And then looking at the bishop and waiting.
They were waiting for their bishop to push back on their father, to challenge him and dig a little deeper.
"I kind of felt stupid sitting there.
It felt like we were being questioned. It didn't feel like he was being questioned."
As far as they know, the bishop didn't probe deeper. Michelle says nothing came of it. No therapists or law enforcement were involved, and their father received no church discipline. Despite this, the abuse decreased. The sisters credit that change to them being on high alert. Years later, Michelle was attending an abuse support group on the Brigham Young University campus.
And I was sitting in a room full of women who had been sexually abused by a family member, most of them. And the story was identical.
Michelle says most of the stories were the same as hers. "My father abused me. I told the bishop. Nothing happened."
I just knew that wasn't going to be my story. I wasn't going to allow that to be my story.
Things were changing for Michelle and Melinda's family. Their parents divorced, and their father was dating another woman whom he wanted to marry. One day, as he was talking about his girlfriend's daughter, Michelle became worried. She says her father was talking about the 12-year-old girl's body, complimenting it.
Oh no, this is the same age I was, the same age my sister was. All the red flags were going up.
Determined not to let this go, Michelle reached out to her father's girlfriend. But Michelle says she showed no concern. So Michelle got in touch with a lawyer friend. They talked about prosecuting her father. But there was a hang-up. The statute of limitations had run out. But Melinda, the younger sister, she could still sue. Melinda was serving a Mormon mission in Germany at the time.
It was summer
of
98. And I got a phone call in the middle of the night.
It was Michelle. She told Melinda what was happening, and they both agreed they needed to do something. At first, they reached out to their father to settle out of court. They asked him to seek clinical help. He rejected that proposal. Then they sued him.
We would tell each other, it stops with us. It's stopping here. We're not going to let this bleed into another generation.
In 2001, their case made it to court in Provo.
It was a jury trial, lasted 3 days. And we were successful.
The jury found Bill Aaron had breached his fiduciary duty and that he had inflicted emotional distress. In its verdict, the jury wrote that Bill Aaron behaved recklessly and offensively by massaging Melinda's breasts and buttocks and forcing her to sleep in the same bed as him. But the jury stopped short of calling it sexual molestation. Their father paid out $25,000 in punitive damages, but his standing in the LDS Church didn't change. Looking back, Michelle and Melinda say a lot of pain and heartache could have been avoided if only their bishop had intervened, if there had been a better plan in place. Melinda sees one glaring issue in particular with how the LDS Church handles reports of abuse.
You ultimately are always reporting to men. And as a woman, when you have situations that happen like ours, it doesn't instill confidence that you're being protected and looked out for when you need that.
In response to a request for comment, LDS Church spokesperson Eric Hawkins wrote in an email that, quote, abuse cannot be tolerated in any form, end quote, and that Bill Aaron's local church leaders have now been informed of this abuse and encouraged to address it. Lee Hale, KUER News.